This is Dr. Feelgood from the Institute for the Not Yet Mentally Insane, here to warn you about potential side effects that listening to Nightmares with Malice Cooper may cause. You can suffer breaking out in a cold sweat, difficulty breathing, erectile dysfunction, bedwetting, violent convulsions, decrease in brain cells, random bowel movements, stroke, loss of hair, loss of consciousness and or sanity, and last but not least, possible death. If you suffer from any of these, please seek medical attention. But as always, keep it tuned in right here to Nightmares with Malice Cooper.
I can totally picture all of that. Oh, really? I can. I can picture it all. All right, I'm going to call Dave. Ready? Hello, Dave.
Hey.
How's it going? We can hear you.
It's going incredible.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Excellent. Phone worked. Everything's fine. I got you.
Everything.
We're on air. We're live. I just played Monsters of Us, and then Parents, I'm a Problem, and that's what I see. I just played all of that right before I called you. Did you want to tell me anything about any of that?
Okay, let's start with one at a time.
Sure.
Monsters Are Us is from a movie that's in pre-production and a correlating graphic novel. It goes back to my young days when my background was I was a young punk rocker when I was very young, at the very beginning of punk. And I actually was a punk playwright during the heydays of punk, and I had a little punk theater company that used to open for bands. Even opened for the Ramones, opened for the Misfits.
Really?
And I ended up writing insert notes for an early Misfits album that their fans all know about and became friends with them. And then they did a record called Monster Business. Horror Business. And I kind of forgot about it.
Mm-hmm.
And like 20, 25 years later, Facebook connected me with all my old friends. And one of them was an actor who had been in a couple of cult films. And one of my friends saw him at a monster movie convention about 6 years ago. And he said, "Do you really know Dave?" And he goes, "Yeah, my friend came and got me and brought me and I reconnected." And I got a vision while I was talking to him about a monster movie. About monsters who were tired about how humans make money off them. And who wanted to do business on their own. And first called it Monster Business as a takeoff on Horror Business.
Huh.
And then turned it into, and then I met someone who was going to be one of the lead actors whose name is Douglas Dunning. And Douglas has been like a B-movie star, one of those people you might not know, but if you're really a horror movie, monster movie fanatic, you'd recognize his face. And he talked to people, and we decided to change the name to Monsters Are Us.
Huh?
And then simultaneously, David Cutting, who's a phenomenal artist, he was the animator on, actually, funny thing is he goes back to Kids TV, and he was on Nickelodeon on Blue.
Really?
But he also did the animated version of Cowboys vs. Alien.
Oh, wow.
And David started turning into a graphic novel. And it really is about a greedy promoter, a human promoter, who has no respect for monsters or humans, for that matter, and degrades everyone, and monsters decide, and the monster world in another universe decides to come here and take vengeance and teach him about teaching people and monsters with respect.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
And the song, which is called Monsters Lament, and subtitled The Taste of Blood, I wrote the lyrics, but the music and the singing is by a phenomenal performer by the name of Paul of the Living Dead. And Paul has a growing, like in the East Coast, he's like getting big. He's the lead singer of a band called the Bad Hormones. W-H-O-R-E-M-O-A-N-S.
That's neat.
But it's not a sexist band. There's women in the band. And that part's kind of like a joke, but Paul is a phenomenal singer, songwriter, producer, and Paul wrote the music for that, and he's singing that version. He's producing another young, rising horror punk star who I think is going to do the final version, but I like that version, the one you just heard from Paul of the Living Dead. And that's the story. And now, if you go on Facebook and friend me, Dave Street, and you want the one where there's a poster that says The Problem, I can then send anyone a like page, because on Facebook there's pictures of the graphic novel and Douglas Dunning, who plays one of the characters. He's friends with a lot of icons of horror and monster, and you can see them, Barbara Steele, Vincent Price, people like that when he was alive, and there's a lot of their pictures on our like page on Facebook.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That will keep me busy for days and days and days. Again.
Yeah. And that's the monster song.
Cool.
And now you also played two other songs.
Parents, I'm a Problem, and That's What I See.
And That's What I See?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're from a play that I've been developing for about 4 or 5 years that's been inching closer to being in a theater and also becoming a phenomenon, and the play is called The Problem. And it's for anyone in the world who's ever been called a problem. And it's how societies all over the world deal with problems, how they look at problems, how people, religion, businesses try to or try not to deal with problems. And I'm a Problem is obviously the theme song of the character whose name is Problem.
Hmm.
Now, that's sung by Alex Amale, and the music to that is by a kind of a hot punk band in Jersey called Ingrid and the Defectors.
Oh.
And Ingrid worked with Joey Ramone, actually.
Nice.
And the Ramones. Now, the other song, which is kind of like a Broadway-ish kind of song, if you mm-hmm. listen to it, that's probably the most Broadway-ish song in the play, that's sung by Donna Destry, who actually has like a couple of dance hits out in Europe right now. But Donna has a phenomenal background, and I've been so blessed that all these people like work with someone like me, like all these important people working with me. Donna was the main backup singer in the 70s and 80s on like an iconic punk band called Blondie. You heard of Blondie, obviously everybody's mm-hmm. heard of Blondie. Her brother was the keyboard player in Blondie, Jimmy Destri. And Donna actually had a record deal when she was really, 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 really young with David Bowie's company, actually.
Wow.
But Donna is hot again, and Donna actually wrote the music for that song. That song is in a scene where they bring Problem to like a self-help motivational like life coach to try to save him, because he believes he's a problem, and he's been raised with negative people around him, and then he believes he can't succeed, and she looks at him and says, "I see a man with a great plan," and she tries to build his self-esteem and give him faith in himself.
Wow.
Well, asking him for money. But it's kind of funny because part of the play is how, like, everybody, some people are sincere, some insincere, but everybody wants money, even if they are sincere.
Wow.
The dilemma of the world. Everybody
so it's like
money.
Real life.
Even if you're sincere, you still need money.
And it's still, like, completely real life. Like, this is... this could happen to anybody. This whole play could happen to anybody. It could be
anywhere
anybody's life.
I mean, do you have problems in Canada?
Well, I'm sure we do. I have problems every day. I had problems this morning getting dressed. I have my shirt on backwards. I'm having a problem right now, my dog barking. Hey! Shh! 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 Never mind you. Excuse me. Really?
Okay, you told me about the dog.
Really?
The magic word.
Really? No more.
The dog wants more problems.
Well, he just...
Or biscuits, one of the two.
Something.
I hope that's not a problem.
No, I think he just... I don't know what he wants. He's on edge. I'm on the phone, and he knows I can't... I can't get up when I'm on... See, this is the problem. I can't get up to go and get him off of the couch, because I'm, like, stuck to the phone, right? So...
If that's a problem... problem. Imagine the problem the world. Escalate that problem by all problems have that people are trying to balance their lives while they have problems like that around them. And then you know why the world's in such a like a neurotic state of existence.
Well, I can imagine all of it because, like I said, I had a problem just getting dressed this morning.
Now, why did you have a problem getting dressed?
Because I put my shirt on backwards, and Rick said, why are you wearing your shirt backwards? And I'm like, why am I wearing his shirt backwards? And I'm like, I don't know. I didn't know. I just picked it.
Or someone else's problem?
Well, it wasn't really... See, I didn't have a problem wearing it backwards at all. But he had a problem with...
backwards on purpose.
Well, I don't know. I wasn't really paying attention. I just grabbed a shirt and...
What kind of shirt was it?
It's a Threshold of Pain shirt.
Oh, it's not a t-shirt.
Yeah, it's a t-shirt. It's a band t-shirt.
Well, what does it say on one side?
Threshold of Pain.
Okay.
Yeah, it was
you
a band.
You want to wear that backwards?
Well, I wanted to wear it with the picture on the front, but whatever. I don't care.
I tell you, my Threshold of Pain has been tested a lot while I've been driving, drawing, and riding the problem. I've had an ever expanding Threshold of Pain. So even bands and stuff like that all comes from reality.
That's true.
Anything that people can feel the pulse of creatively comes from reality.
I agree.
I think the whole world is being pushed to the Threshold of Pain.
It's quite possible. I mean, really. Especially these days. I mean, right now. I don't know what's going to happen to the States. I mean, I've been watching everything, and it's like, your president, nobody even knows who he really is.
But you know what? No one knows who any president is.
Well, yeah, but that's, they can trace all the other presidents are all linked by family, apparently.
To the same test tube?
Pretty close. Which is really scary if you think about it.
Or the same spaceship.
Well, that's just it. We don't know, do we?
No, we don't know. And it's amazing the things we don't know. And that's part of, like, in the problem, what the problem finally has to learn is the fact that it is possible that the answers we're searching for as a planet exist on what we think is beyond the planet. Well, like, you know, there's things we still don't know. It doesn't mean they don't exist. We don't know them. But, like, we don't know where the universe ends.
We
don't know what's up there. We don't know if there's another dimension. It doesn't mean there is or isn't one. It means we just don't know it yet. And the problem, while making it clear that on one hand we have to deal with our own problems and we have to have a world where problems have a chance to redeem themselves and be loved as people, etc., 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 we still have to keep open the possibility. I know you do a paranormal thing, and it's called paranormal only because people haven't found out that it's real, because if it's real, it's not paranormal. If it's real, it really is. And it's only paranormal because they have it. Like, no one's found Bigfoot yet. When Bigfoot is actually found, then it's not a monster anymore. It's just like another ape or chimpanzee or something. But the same thing that I explore in the problem is that the answers that we're looking for, in part, probably are. And I'm not the person who thought of this. Many people smarter than me have explored this in many writings, that there's a metaphysical world, and that metaphysical world, and that the atoms and the molecules of the whole universe can, like, zoom through a telephone between me and you, and we can crystallize a thought, and our intelligence can connect with the greater universe, and all of a sudden, some new solution and new thought materializes.
Yeah.
And that's, so it's a combination of searching for answers, and that's why, you know, but that's why I believe everything will be okay.
Well, see, because the paranormal is just going to become normal.
At least we think they're outside our own physical existence.
Yeah.
No, actually aren't. It's just that we don't know how to communicate or prove they're there yet.
Well, it's all going to become normal once we do.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And then the paranormals are going to need paralegals. You're gonna be sued by everyone else, then you're gonna know they're really normal. They'll only know they exist when they have.
No, not really, because, I mean, technically, no matter what, I don't think you would have any control over what was there. You know,
well, you know what?
It's gonna be more normal for it to be there, but it's not going to be any less not there.
Okay, I agree. But the good news is this.
Mm-hmm.
I think, at least like what keeps me alive, the hope and faith as a person, as a writer, mm-hmm. as someone who works with kids part-time, is the fact that, on one hand, we don't have control over the whole world. But if we align ourselves correctly with the true nature of the universe, we don't have to control it. Because if we do that, the universe will show us and give us what we need. And I think, like, the people that I've let influence mm-hmm. my life, going way back, you want to want a really heavy dude, back in the early 1900s, there was a guy by the name of Wallace Wattles. Did you ever hear of Wallace Wattles?
No, but I'm Canadian, so...
began what became a school of almost paranormal capitalism. Which was
really?
Believing in free enterprise without believing in being ruthless scumbags, basically. And how you could do that. How you could set up a nation of businesses with having not being cutthroats and lowlifes.
Huh.
And what he said was that, what were, like the whole paranormal thing, he said there's another universe out there that's elastic, and that if you... he was the one who said if you align yourself with that universe, and you had to do two things. Number one, in the real world, whenever you did business, whoever you ever did business with, you had to give them more in use than they ever gave you in money. So regardless of what anyone gives you in money, you have to give them a better deal on how it affects their life.
Hmm.
That's what you had to do in the real world, but then in the world that some people don't consider real because they don't know how to test it and see it and define it yet, that paranormal world, he said that if you do that and if you keep a clear vision of where you want to go and what you want, that in fact, that if you implant that vision in that greater metaphysical world, it will send it back to you as reality in your life. That's pretty heavy thinking.
Yeah, it is.
And actually, if you're familiar, like, with the whole thing, you think familiar with the whole thing of The Secret and all that stuff that was popular the last 4 or 5 years?
No.
Oh, in America, on the Oprah Show, oh, there's this whole thing, The Secret, and it's all about that. It's all about attracting success in an over-ruthless world by not paying attention to it, but on focusing on those kind of moral standards in your life and having a clear vision. And knowing there's a greater world that transcends what seems to be the desperate nature of this planet.
Well.
And I'll tell you what, and it's that world that you can tap into to cure disease. And it sounds kind of crazy, but he would say that your bank account is up there, not here. Therefore, you always have millions of dollars because your bank account's in that world, and there's always millions of dollars. All you have to do is align yourself correctly, and you can go in there and withdraw it.
Huh.
Pretty neat, right? The dog hasn't even barked.
Wow.
So you're making me think about things, Malice.
Well, how'd I do that?
Not everybody gets me to think about these things. And see, what I'm trying to do, like, in my creative stuff, like, with the movie, like... and yeah, I know you like monster stuff and horror stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm trying to even in my writing in Monsters in the movie and the graphic novel, I'm trying to kind of, you know, imply even in a monster movie, because the monsters are kind of like they're aware of that and they're tired of, like, this guy, and I'm even trying to show in that the humans who the monsters don't eat are the ones who have figured it out, and finally the monsters let them take over the horror world.
Wow.
And they make an ethical, honorable business deal with the monsters.
That would be like...
And so what I want to do with Monsters R Us, I want to have the movie out, but I want to have a graphic novel, and I want to have music online, so as people read the graphic novel, they could go to the website and listen to the song that belongs in that novel.
But what if they're slow readers?
Well, the good news is the pictures are pretty cool. And actually, even if they don't like reading, they could follow the pictures and listen to the music.
I'm all for the pictures. I'm a picture looker-atter.
Look at the pictures on the website. The pictures are fantastic. David Cutting is an amazing artist. Now, the pictures are going to be really, the pictures themselves are going to be mesmerizing.
Awesome. I love pictures.
Horrifically mesmerizing.
That's awesome. I can't wait.
The problem, I'd like to think I write for an ADD generation. Because I don't have a very long attention span, but I'm writing long things. So what I ended up, someone who saw it said, all my writing is almost as if it's little vignettes and skits that you could actually take out and look at one at a time.
Well, how long did it take you?
To telling a story, but if you're like, if you're someone who doesn't have the attention to look at a whole thing, you could just look at one of the things and listen to a song, and that itself is a self-contained little thing.
How long did it take you to write the problem itself?
Okay, the problem, actually, this is pretty amazing. The problem started probably about 5 or 6 years ago.
Uh-huh.
I was living here, and someone who was a problem was driving my life crazy. And I was like, and someone else, and this problem is about someone who's a problem and someone who, a woman who goes around helping problems, but the definition of helping problems is dumping them on other people. However, by the play's over, they both go through growth as a character, and she becomes like a real self-empowered woman. He ends up not being a problem, and they almost lose it, but they get it back together. But at the start, I had issues in my life with people who were driving me crazy. Then I wrote out this general script on Facebook. I ran into someone who I knew when she was very, 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 very young. She was a young punk rocker in the East Village. Her parents were famous stage actors and actresses in America. And she doesn't want me to say their name, but she's on a Buddhist retreat right now, so she doesn't know I'm saying her name. But her father, she's going to have me if I says this. But do you know, like, older like, movies and stuff? Her father's a movie star, but he hasn't made, you know, like, a movie, like, in quite a while. But he was like, I think, in the early Clash of the Titans. Her father's Rip Torn. Do you know who that is?
Yes.
Okay, well, her name was then Angelica Torn. She changed her name to Angelica Page for her mother, Geraldine Page, who was an astonishing actress in America. And Angelica, like, I hadn't seen her, like, in 30 years, and she was, like, a young punk rocker. Since then, she's been on Broadway, and she encouraged me to write it. And I said, listen, as a friend, would you read the script? And she read it, liked it so much, she had, her own little, like, reading series, her own little, like, theater, and the next week, they read it. And for the first 2 years, we did a series of readings, and it wasn't a musical then. It was then this psychotic, like, semi-absurdist drama comedy. Then, all of a sudden, I think about two and a half years later, my friends and I just connected with more people on Facebook, more people came to see me, and then Paul the Living Dead, who's like the musical person like around here who's cool, in Jersey, he said, turn it into a musical, and he started writing some of the music for it. And even though he wrote the music for The Monsters, he also wrote the music for like a third of the songs in The Problem, too. Then we got asked to do this famous place, which was the Gershwin Hotel, who was run by all Andy Warhol's people, and they were doing this whole performance series, and this was like 2.5 years ago, and I got asked to do a reading with music there. And the place was like mobbed with people. And then we did some music nights, and then Angelica introduced me to this phenomenal director named Vera Baron. Vera, and Freddie Katz became the music director. Freddie's played and done engineering for Stevie Van Zandt. You know what that is, obviously.
Wow.
And I really had like top level people, and Angelica was on the board of directors of a famous theater place in America called the Actors Studio, and they let us actually do it at the Actors Studio and work it out there.
Cool.
And it looked like it was going to take like a major leap and go on Broadway, but you talk about threshold of pain, then I went down. Then I, don't ask me how, but I tore the tendon in my thigh and I tore my chest muscle.
Oh, no.
And I was supposed to used to go out and hustle the money and get everything, and I suddenly was just whacked in life, and it threw me back about 8 to 10 months.
Oh, no.
But in the meantime, we started recording the music. Those songs are really cool. Don't they really sound like they could be on an album, the songs you played?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
And, I mean, so actually, there's a major recording studio where Vera was engineer, let us do it. And then I met, and like all these phenomenal people came on and did the music. Donna Destry did it. I said, Ingrid and the Defectors, Yove, and Ingrid and Yove, Paul the Living Dead did the music, Alex did the music, all these incredible people. Freddie did the music.
Cool.
And then we and most of the people who were acting in it were Angelica's friends, and most of them have been on TV, like not the lead role of the series, but leading episode roles, like in Law and Order and things like that.
Oh, cool.
People who acted were like real actors who like are, and we have, by the way, on our website, it's called beaproblem.com, and that's our theme. Our theme is now you can be part of the problem. And now that I'm back up and rocking, I want to actually do an interactive website that goes beyond just the play, but have people who are problems all over the world come in and tell us their problems.
That's awesome.
Problem of the month.
That's awesome.
And so on Be a Problem, we have a trailer, and there's a really, really great, the trailer is really fantastic. And all the music is on the website, too.
Cool.
The music is on the website, beaproblem.com. And I don't know if anybody has a theater in Canada. Anybody there? And you have an amazing play that right now America seems afraid to put on. Although at the same time it's cutting edge, but it has profound commercial potential without selling out anything. If anybody wants a hit, let's do it in Canada first. Anybody out there? Anybody smart enough with a theater in Canada listening to this? Please go to beaproblem.com and immediately make the atoms and molecules of the universe start moving to bring this theater into your, this play into your theater.
That would be cool. You keep me posted and let me know when it's going to be playing anywhere.
Yeah, anywhere in the universe. This play can be playing anywhere in the universe.
Well, you keep me posted.
Anywhere. It's a human experience. Just like we're talking. I mean, like I feel like you're,
exactly,
like you're in my house here talking to me and everything. When humans connect, I mean, that's the one thing that changes it. When new people, and you work with new people, and you have new energy, and you bring things to a new level, that's what does change the world. I mean, that's why we never should feel too desperate, especially in today's world where, like, you know, I can meet you, you can meet me. We didn't even know each other like 5 days ago.
Huh?
You know, I'm on your show. So, I mean, the thing is, that is one of the great things in today's world, is that you can meet people, and we do have an opportunity to change, an opportunity to come up with new ideas, new solutions, new songs, new creative projects, et cetera, and everything. That's why we should never be too desperate in this world today.
For sure.
We have the ability to communicate with each other.
Dave, my phone's beeping. I'm going to let you go. I'll talk to you another time. Take care. Thanks for being here.
I had a really great time. Thank you, Malice.
Take care.
Okay.
Okay, bye. Hello? Oh, they hung up. I don't know who it was. Whoever it was, phone back. Halo down, albino.
Hey,